There's a new CD box set that features recordings of many great poets from throughout the 20th century reading their own work. It's called Poetry on Record. We invited former U.S. Poet Laureate Billy Collins to choose some of his favorite recordings from the box. In part two of our interview, we're going to hear a couple of more selections, and Collins will read from his latest collection of poems, which is called The Trouble with Poetry. Billy Collins is currently New York State Poet Laureate. Billy, the next poem you've chosen is by Robert Frost, and this is a very famous poem of his, The Road Not Taken. Why did you choose this poem? You know, it's one of those poems in a way that's so popular, people sometimes don't even hear it when they hear it. It's
true.
A poem that's easy to take for granted and not really pay attention to in that sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's also a poem that it's like the Star Spangled Banner in a way that you don't really listen to the lyrics or think about them much. It's also a poem that's very easily understood, and we won't have to go into that, but people take it as a cry toward individuality. You should take the road less traveled by and be an individual and go to your beat your own drum and all that. But if you look closely at the poem, he really emphasizes the fact that these two paths are really look about the same in many ways. And so the choice is not really a clear one.
This is the poem with that famous line about two roads diverged in the woods and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. That's the part you're referring to.
That's right. Although he's at the beginning, he's at the end, rather, he says that I'll be telling this ages and ages hence. In other words, this is what I'll be saying about it later. He is not really saying it now. It's a very complicated poem.
And this recording was made in 1941. I think a lot of us grew up hearing Robert Frost as an old man. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to hear him as a younger man.
Yes, this is one of the Library of Congress recordings. They have a huge archive of recorded poetry. And yes, this is 20-something years before his death.
Okay, so let's hear Robert Frost reading The Road Not Taken.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
Billy Collins, I'm sure you've read this poem many times over your life as a poet and teacher. Has the poem, the sound of it, the language of it, the meaning of it changed for you over the years?
Well, I think the big, just in that one shift, I mean, I think like most readers, when I read it, say, in high school or maybe in college, I thought it was this cry for doing your own thing, being an independent person and doing the, you know, kind of a cry for American individualism. And the big change occurred when I kept looking at, the more I looked at the poem, the more it seemed like these two paths are the same path or just two paths that are indistinguishable. And he doesn't know really what the difference is. It made all the difference, but we don't know what difference that is. We don't know if it's for better or worse.
Billy, the final poem that you've chosen is by Galway Kinnell, and this is called After Making Love, We Hear Footsteps. Tell us a little bit about Galway Kinnell and why you've chosen this poem.
Two things. I love the poem, and I love Galway Kinnell, he's a terrific reader. We were saying that some poets don't do justice to their poems, and perhaps it was a little like silent movie stars when they made talkies, you know, that some of them were tall, dark, and handsome, but they had the voices of cartoon characters, so their careers ended with the silent films. Galway Kinnell is just a terrific reader. He has a sonorous confident voice that bears his poetry forth in a very convincing way. And the poem is a lovely domestic marital poem, which has lovely detail, like the boy's pajamas, but also this larger thrust, which is the blessing of having children.
Well, why don't we hear it? This is Galway Kinnell reading After Making Love, We Hear Footsteps.
After making love, we hear footsteps. For I can snore like a bullhorn, or play loud music, or sit up talking with any reasonably sober Irishman, and Fergus will only sink deeper into his dreamless sleep, which goes by all in one flash. But let there be that heavy breathing, or a stifled come cry, anywhere in the house, and he will wrench himself awake and make for it on the run. As now, we lie together, after making love, quiet, touching down the length of our bodies, familiar touch of the long married, and he appears, in his baseball pajamas, it happens, the neck opening so small he has to screw them on, and flops down between us, and hugs us, and snuggles himself to sleep, his face gleaming with satisfaction at being this very child. In the half-darkness, we look at each other and smile and touch arms across this little startlingly muscled body, this one whom habit of memory propels to the ground of his making. Sleeper, only the mortal sounds can sing awake. This blessing love gives again into our arms.
Galway Kinnell, recorded in 1996, and it's one of the readings featured on the new box set Poetry on Record. 98 poets read their work. And with us is Billy Collins, the former U.S. Poet Laureate, current Poet Laureate of New York. And his latest collection of poems is called The Trouble with Poetry. You know, hearing you talk about the poems that we've been playing from this box set makes me really wish that I had a chance to study poetry with you in college. You've taught for many years. Am I right in saying you recently retired?
Yeah, sort of semi-retired. I'm going to go back and teach next semester, but I've I'm just about to put down the chalk for good. But I still visit a lot of colleges, and I still love teaching and making contact with students.
When you think of looking ahead to retirement, what do you think about how you'd structure your day?
Well, I hate to quote Max Beerbohm again, but he was the one who said that the hardest thing about being a poet is knowing what to do with the other 23 and a half hours of the day. But if you're a poet, you know, have to fill in that time. I mean, we have certain obligations like looking at clouds and kicking acorns, and daydreaming can while away the hours.
Do you get a little crazy when you have too much time to daydream?
Oh, no.
One's mind turn to the wrong thoughts.
Oh, no. I get I like to get bored. I find that boredom results in creativity. I can't get very creative unless that's preceded by a really flat period where there's very little going on, this kind of, you know, tumbleweed watching blankness. And it's really out of that creative stuff seems to happen rather than having a busy mind.
Well, there's a poem I'd like you to read from your latest collection, and the collection's called The Trouble with Poetry. This is a poem called Bereft. Would you tell us about writing this poem?
I don't know if I remember much about writing it, except that it's really just about the same theme that I seem to write about all the time, which is I think someone said that poetry is about how great it is to be alive and how terrible it is going to be to be dead. I think it's just about that. I find it a little hard to talk about my own poems. I think to get someone interested in talking about their own writing, it's a little like trying to get if you've ever tried to get a dog to look in the mirror, you know, if you have a puppy and you say, look at you, you're so cute, look in the mirror. No, go ahead, look. And they just are looking at you. They wonder why you're holding on to them like that. And they have no interest in looking in the mirror. I mean, parakeets like looking in the mirror, but I think writers are maybe more like dogs, that they don't want to look at themselves too often.
Well, but one thing about the poem, was it written shortly after a funeral?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I mean, death is the all-consuming topic of poetry, and so poets are in a constant state of funeral.
And with Sorry. Me laughing away here, let's hear, yeah. let's hear this really beautiful and reflective poem,
okay.
which is called Bereft.
Bereft. I liked listening to you at lunch today as you talked about the dead, the lucky dead, you called them, citing their freedom from rent and furniture, no need for doorknobs, snow shovels, or windows in a field beyond, no more railway ticket in an inside pocket, no more railway, no more tickets, no more pockets, no more bee chasing you around the garden, no more you chasing your hat around a corner, no bright moon on the glimmering water, no cool breast felt beneath an open robe, more like an empty zone that souls traverse, a vaporous place at the end of a dark tunnel, a region of silence, except for the occasional beating of wings. And I wanted to add, as the sun dazzled your lifted wine glass, the sound of the newcomers weeping.
Since we spend so much time talking about poetry, I thought it would be fitting to close with the title poem from your latest collection, The Trouble with Poetry. I know you don't like to talk a lot about your poems, but I'm going to nevertheless ask you to introduce it for us.
It's sort of an anti-poetry poem in a way. I mean, it's a little ambiguous, but I think part of the fun I have in writing poems is that you can make fun of other poets, and poetry is an opportunity to take oneself so absurdly seriously that I can't help kind of mocking the whole enterprise at times. And I think that was maybe the spirit of the poem.
Why don't you read it for us?
I'd love to. It's called The Trouble with Poetry. The trouble with poetry, I realized as I walked along a beach one night, cold Florida sand under my bare feet, a show of stars in the sky. The trouble with poetry is that it encourages the writing of more poetry, more guppies crowding the fish tank, more baby rabbits hopping out of their mothers into the dewy grass. And how will it ever end, unless the day finally arrives when we have compared everything in the world to everything else in the world, and there is nothing left to do then but quietly close our notebooks and sit with our hands folded on our desks. Poetry fills me with joy, and I rise like a feather in the wind. Poetry fills me with sorrow, and I sink like a chain flung from a bridge. But mostly, poetry fills me with the urge to write poetry, to sit in the dark and wait for a little flame to appear at the tip of my pencil. And along with that, the longing to steal, to break into the poems of others with a flashlight and a ski mask. And what an unmerry band of thieves we are, cut purses, common shoplifters, I thought to myself as a cold wave swirled around my feet and the lighthouse moved its megaphone over the sea, which is an image I stole directly from Lawrence Ferlinghetti, to be perfectly honest for a moment, the bicycling poet of San Francisco, whose little amusement park of a book I used to carry in a side pocket of my uniform up and down the treacherous halls of high school.
Oh, what a great poem.
Thank you.
And did you carry Ferlinghetti's Coney Island of the Mind around with you, and what did it mean to you?
Absolutely. And a little City Lights edition would fit right into your jacket pocket. Well, that was when I was in high school, and that was when Beat Poetry came out, and it had an explosive effect on it. Just blew all those school poems apart. So when I read Ginsberg and Ferlinghetti, naturally I just wanted to be like them. So I began writing these kind of, I want to be a beatnik poems. Those were probably the first poets I really started imitating.
Billy Collins, you were poet laureate from 2001 to 2003. You served two terms.
Yes.
So now that that's, you know, a few years behind you, can you look back and tell us what impact you think it had on you as a poet and just as a guy?
Well, as a guy, it took up so much time. I was kind of, I was interviewed a lot. That's the main thing that changed.
Guilty.
People wanted, yeah, but you could interview me, wake me up in the middle of the night and interview me. But you're interviewed a lot and ask questions that are a little beyond your depth, or at least my depth, about the future of American poetry and these other large, ponderous questions. You get so busy doing these kind of social, like poetry promotion things, that I began to suspect that what the Poet Laureate Office really was, it was a government plot to silence one poet. So that they would pick out kind of a productive poet who seemed to be, you know, doing well, and they'd saddle you with this job so that you'd be impossible to write any poems for 2 years. I think even after you're finished with your tenure as Poet Laureate, you're kind of always the former Poet Laureate. You know, it's a little like being the former Miss Kentucky. You know, you can, you know, your teeth can be falling out and you can have a wig on sideways, but you can still say, I was Miss Kentucky in 1927, you know. So it sort of follows you around afterward.
Well, Billy Collins, I love your poems. Thank you so much for reading your poetry and for talking with us about poetry today. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Terry.
Billy Collins' latest collection of poems is called The Trouble with Poetry.